It's 8:12 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, members of the Wasatch County Board of Education met last night to, among other things, hold a discussion around the Davis Demographic Study that forecasts growth within the district over the coming years. In the studio to discuss that and some other items, I have the spokesperson for the school district, John Moss. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. So during last night's study session, the board did hear from Davis Demographics. Can you just start by telling us what Davis Demographics does?
Sure. Davis Demographics is a firm that specializes in the demographics as related to education. They have an office in Dallas, Texas, one in Phoenix, Arizona, and I believe another one in L.A., but they specialize in studying where every single student lives and how the construction that's coming in is going to affect the numbers of students. So it's a very vital part of our planning for the future, knowing what is coming towards us as far as this tidal wave of children from the students that are moving in. And as you know, the Wasatch County is a hotbed for construction right now.
Yeah. So this is why you hired them, just to kind of get a preview of what could come.
We need to know where our students are so we know how to handle our facilities. Do we need another elementary school? Do we need another middle school? What's going to happen 5 years down the road? And their study encompasses all that.
Yeah. Any idea how much that contract was for?
You know, I don't know that. I wasn't involved in that at all.
And is the work done?
The work is ongoing. Mm. It's something that is a continual thing. In fact, they are doing some training of people in our office so we can continue to do some of that by ourselves.
All right. So how does Davis Demographics determine growth? I mean, what models do they use?
They look, first of all, at where our actual students live. We give them a dump of the locations and ages of our students. And they plot those on a map, and then they look at every construction project that's underway. There are 130 different projects being built or planned right now in Wasatch County. Over the course of the next 10 years, they project an additional 12,600 homes will be built in the valley. And the majority of those are single-family dwellings, not apartments, but single-family dwellings, which bring in students. And there's a statistical method they use to figure out how many students come in from each home. Heber City, for example, every home built in Heber City will bring in 0.9 students on an average. In Wasatch County, it's 0.6. And so we look at all of those numbers to look and kind of project where our growth is going to go as these new buildings come online.
So what they had mentioned last night, that 10 years from now, they forecast that the district will have about 400 more students kindergarten through fifth grade district-wide, but 1,100 more students in grades 9 through 12. How did they explain?
Isn't that intriguing? Yeah.
How did they explain why the high school growth is so much more than the elementary school?
Well, there are a number of factors. One is that we have learned that when people make major moves in their lives, from maybe moving from California to Utah, they try to schedule that around their kids' education so that they don't move their children in the middle of high school. They move at the start of high school, and that's one factor. But another factor is that a lot of our younger students are in private schools, homeschooling, things of that sort. But when they get to the high school age, then they move back into our system. And so we get a large bubble that comes in that ninth grade year. Last year, the number of freshmen we had come in was 659. And that was over 100 more than Davis Demographics predicted, because they came from this unseen population out there. And so what we're trying to do now is to get a better handle on the unseen population.
Yeah. So any other findings that they presented that you thought were relevant here?
You know, it was a fascinating discussion. Our elementary growth has slowed some, but that is partly due to the birth rate 5 years ago. And the demographics are just, it's interesting what impacts them. But our high school, as you mentioned, is going to be growing even faster. And that puts us at the largest high school in the state right now is Granger, with 3,100 students. And in 5 years, we'll be over 3,200 students. Hmm. And so we have the option of being the largest high school in the state, or looking at some other options. And what we're trying to do right now, because you're well aware that our bond effort failed last fall, we're trying to take the public's temperature to find out what they want. And so we're in the process of gathering that information from our community.
Yeah, so how are you going to be using this information that you got from Davis Demographics?
Well, first of all, we want to inform our public of what is coming down the pike. So we actually filmed the presentation last night. We'll be putting that online for people to watch. We're trying to improve our outreach and get this information out to people so that they know what's going on. We plan on holding several public meetings where we can not only present information, but let people ask questions and give us input. We really are looking for input from our community. What is it that they want us to do with their children? That's an important piece to us.
Yeah. Did you get a good turnout at last night's meeting? Or?
No, there was not that good of a turnout, but it's not unusual for public meetings that we don't get a good turnout. We did have a few people from some of the other government entities who came. We invited all of them to come as well. And some who couldn't make it asked us to send the information because they're interested. There's a lot going on. People have a lot on their plate right now. And so I understand why people don't make it to a 5 o'clock study session.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting. I mean, you bring that up because it's not the school district approving all of this development. It's just something that the school district has to react to.
Exactly right. We have no say in it at all. But you look at the Sorensen development, which over the course of the next, it's a fairly extended period of time, but that development alone will bring over 5,000 homes into our valley. It will bring in enough population for us to duplicate the size of our school district in that one development. And so you look at that plus the other 129 developments going on, and those are just the ones that are active or have started the process. There are a number more on the books that are a few steps behind that. So the growth in Wasatch County is just, it's been amazing recently.
Yeah. Has the administration or the board indicated any more of what another possible bond would look like?
That's what we're studying right now. That we need to talk to our public and let the public give us some input. They didn't approve what we put forward last year, so we're going to try to get more information from them, and we're going to seek guidance from our patrons at this point.
Yeah, any anticipation it could happen this November?
You know, it depends, again, on our community, what our community wants. I don't think we've closed the door on that, but I don't think that that's something that is set in stone. As we gather this information the next few weeks and months, we'll see the landscape start to develop in front of us.
Yeah. Also, just wanted to ask you about the land swap that the district had done with the LDS Church for the new elementary school, right? Uh-huh. Because you were going to tear down Midway and then swap out property and build on the new property that you had swapped with the church for. So now that the bond failed, what happens to that land?
You know, I'm not sure exactly where we are on that. I know that that is still a pending issue. That one hasn't been finalized at this point. The LDS Church is not in a big hurry to make that swap. When we get to that point, I think that that's still a possibility available for us.
Okay. Also, just wanted to ask you, last week, Heber Valley Elementary School was without power for 2 days, including last Friday, where students were actually dismissed.
Right.
What happened? What was
going
on?
You know, that's an interesting thing. That school was built in 97. So it's not that old of a school, but the main circuit breaker went out. It tripped and then burned, and so the power to the entire school went out, including to our backup systems. And so when we jumped in and tried to fix it, we had a repairman there for several hours, and they just couldn't fix it. But we also can't buy that part anymore. It's not available. And so in order to buy a new part, we would have to retrofit a large section. So we did locate a retrofitted master breaker in California, and it took a day to get it up here, but they've got that installed. It comes with a guarantee. So we're comfortable where our work is now, but it's just one of those things. They were mentioning last night in the board meeting that in all the time they've been that Francis Harrison, our facilities manager, he's never seen this happen. And then when it went out, it was a part that couldn't be replaced and had it was a surge. But, you know, let me tell you about what happened when that power went out. The kids came on Thursday, and there's no electricity. And the teachers just stepped up, and the community stepped up. And the school really stayed fairly warm. I was over there at about 3 o'clock when we were trying to make plans for the next day. It was starting to feel a little chilly, but it was still comfortable. But the community stepped up. They ordered lunch from Little Caesar's Pizza, and they brought in more and more, and they just kept giving to the kids, so the kids were well taken care of. And that really impressed me, how the community stepped up when there was a time of need. We got the message message out that school would be canceled on Friday because we didn't have confidence that the repairs would be made. And we had a crew in place on Friday morning in case parents showed up. They didn't get the word. We only had 3 students that showed up. So the word got out well. It was well publicized, and that turned out to be not such a bad situation.
Yeah.
And Tuesday, I was over there doing some filming, and they were all having their Valentine's party on Tuesday.
So does a day have to be made up, or does the State Board of Education just waive that?
That will be seen. There will be an appeal made. We did make electronic lessons available to kids who did want to keep working that day. So there was work available to them, but not every kid has access to that. And so it'll depend on the state's ruling. But if it does need to be made up, we'll make that up at the end of the year.
Okay. Also, just wanted to ask you about House Bill 58. This is in the Utah House of Representatives, a bill aimed to curb vaping in schools. It goes now on to the House Senate. It did get approved. As we know, vaping, not easy to detect. I mean, right. Is this something that I'm guessing you guys can all get behind?
You know, actually, we're on the forefront of that fight. Over a year ago, we installed vape detectors in all of our bathrooms in our secondary schools. And the vape detectors have been very, very effective as it alerts us when that's going on in the bathroom. They also, privacy in a bathroom is important. You can't be in there with cameras. But these detectors can detect the chemicals. They also can detect loud noises. So if someone's being bullied in a bathroom, for example, an alarm will go off and one of our administrators will be texted and then get down there right away. So these detectors have been a great investment for us. But it also, we have brought in a number of kids who have been caught vaping. We don't just punish those kids. We put them into a cessation program where they go through a training and they learn what vaping is really like and what smoking is like. And we're trying not to just beat kids up with this. We're using the vape detectors as another educational tool.
Yeah. So the bill, I mean, it establishes clear policies, and I guess school boards must prohibit, but I think that's already been done in your case, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, so you're putting them through the education program, which right. This bill also, yeah. So
this was an interesting process, Leslie. The parents were the first ones to alert us that this was going on. Mm-hmm. And they called their school board members, and they had little cottage meetings, and that grew and grew, and our school board came back and said, we are going to take action on this. And it was a very proactive from the ground up. The parents saw what was happening, let us know. We took steps to prevent it and to curb it. It's been a fun process to watch. I mean, you hate to see something like vaping get started, but it's been really interesting to watch the response the school district has made to this.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, John?
No, I think that's it. One other thing. We, at the start of our school board meeting last night, we had a couple of celebrations that were just awesome. We had a couple of our ROTC students who were singled out because they were driving down the road one day, saw an older gentleman out trying to shovel the snow. He's like, they pulled over just in their shirt sleeves. They got up, they shoveled all of his snow, hopped in their car and drove away. Didn't leave their names or anything. We found out who they were and honored them last night. We also honored the parents that have put together a program called PEAK. This is parents that are working to help disabled kids have more opportunities. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program. Dr. Ben Springer is our director of special education, and he has helped the parents form this. It is a parent-driven organization. And some of the kids spoke last night at the board meeting, and they received a standing ovation at the end because it was so moving what they did. So some great celebrations of great things going on. They also honored the band for the growth in their marching band program. And I love to see these celebrations where we are promoting the good things that are happening, and there are tons of good things happening right now.
Okay, John, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's John Moss again, the spokesperson for Wasatch County School District. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:30. Good morning. Well, along with Park City's Visioning 2020 and Heber City's Visioning 2050, Camas City also looking at its future. On the phone with me is Chris McClaw. She sits on a committee called Camas 2020, also chairs the Historical Preservation Committee. Good morning, Chris, and thanks for talking with us.
Good morning.
Anyway, start by telling us why this committee called about this committee called Camas 2020. I mean, is it formed by residents? Was it something that the city council initiated?
Well, RUDAP is the Rural Urban Design Assistance Team. They made a 70-page, we got the grant through them in Camas, and they made a 70-page suggestion that was the mayor asked the community to get involved. And so it's all volunteer-based in order to implement what they suggested. And that's a group of architects and professionals all over the country that help small towns improve. And a big part of what I'm going to do is the historical, heading up the historical preservation, because I own a historic home there. And I'm also involved with a bunch of volunteers who are, have been in the Camas Valley for a long time who want to see it stay Camas, to stay as rural as possible.
So what's the mission of the group then, is to keep Camas Camas? We've heard this before.
Yes, well, it's to keep it, to preserve it as much as possible. We know that development is coming because a lot of the old-time locals are retiring and selling land. And but, you know, everyone I know and everyone that they've surveyed has said that they don't want it to become a big city or to become overdeveloped.
Sure. Now, does this the group meet regularly, and are the meetings open to the public?
Yes, our next meeting is March 19th in the Camas City Hall at 6:30, and they are open to, I mean, anyone can come to that. The volunteers are based in the Camas Valley, but we're open to, you know, donations, anything to that effect. There are six different teams of volunteers, and mine is just the one that I'm chairing is Historic Sites and Preservation. But we have a team for murals and art and gathering places. We're planning to have a farmers market on Friday evenings right next to the city hall. We have business development, facades and signage so that we can control some of what those show up as. We have welcome signs and trails, beautification, streetlights and planners, events and community branding and celebrations.
Okay. Wow. And how many people are involved?
We have 150 people right now, and we're hoping to get more involvement.
Okay. So you had mentioned in the email that the Wagstaff barn there on State Route 248 was apparently torn down in the middle of the night last month. Do we know by whom? The property owner?
Yes, the property owner is the one who developed Silver Summit in Park City over north of Home Depot. And I did talk to that property owner last night, and I got some new information from them. They said that they tore it down because it was somewhat dilapidated and not safe, and they had vagrants, some people staying in the home next to it. And so they saved the key components of the barn, and they're going to rebuild it to look the same. They've had architects and photographs, and they're going to use it as a community gathering place. So in my mind, since it's already down, that's really good news.
Yeah. So can you locate where it was for us?
Okay, so just as you go into Camas on 248, before you get to the grocery store Food Town, and before you get to the Camas Commons, it was on the right hand side of the road on 248. So right now you just see trees. So that's how you, I mean, that's the only way you can really tell that it was there. There's a line of about 6 to 8 large trees that have been there for over 100 years.
Yeah. So this isn't the barn that's featured on the homepage of the Camas City Government webpage, is it?
It is. You know, I would have to look that up. I don't know what's on the homepage. I will look that up. But if anyone wants to know more information, there's Camas 2020 website. It's on Facebook. It's just look up at Camas Action 2020.
Oh, okay. Because I did look for something. I couldn't find anything. I was
looking. So they have Camas2020Action@gmail.com, and then they have Camas in Action on social media. So it is a little confusing.
Okay. Now, did this barn, did it have any historical designation, or did we just think it was historical?
Well, we just loved it as we came into the valley. That was one of the one of the barns that in Camas that I am aware of that's been there for over 100 years. It was owned by the Wagstaff family, so they call it the Wagstaff Barn. I have a painting of it by Jan Perkins, who's a local artist who lives in Oakley. So I've been fond of it for years.
Yeah. Now, did the owner require, did they need to get a permit then to pull it down? I mean, are there historic regulations in place that would forbid property owners from tearing down historic structures?
That's what we're trying to organize with the historic preservation team, but they were under, they had every right to tear it down.
Sure. Okay. All right. So if people are interested, I mean, this March 19th meeting, is that kind of an all group or is it just for the historic preservation?
No, it's all six teams of volunteers will be there. And if anybody wants to come and be a part of it, they're welcome to. And you can also, like I say, email at thecamas2020action@gmail.com if you have any other questions.
Okay. Do you have some kind of timeline on when you hope to have things done?
You know, it's really all volunteer based, and we're meeting every week. Each of our teams meet every week, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, and then the 70-page grant that you mentioned. I mean, is that available somewhere that people can have a look at some of the recommendations?
Yes, that's RUDAP's report, and that is available. And but I will find out and let you know. I'm thinking it's the CAMAS Action 2020. There's a website, so I need to. I've read it, but I don't know where to find it for the group. So, CAMAS2020action@gmail.com is a way to.
Okay.
To reach that.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just I'm really excited about preserving the historic value of CAMAS. I've lived there for just 3 years. I lived in Park City for over 20 years, and I just love this whole Summit County and the Camas Valley. So I want to preserve what we have left. I live in an 1897 historic home, and we're letting people who have old homes put markers on their homes that aren't necessarily National or Utah Historic Registries because that limits what they can do, but also show the community where the historic homes are, give a little history about them.
Okay, Chris, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Chris McClaws again with the CAMAS Visioning 2020. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:42. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Intermountain Healthcare has opened a new psychiatry and counseling clinic at its Park City Hospital campus. In the studio with details, I have the CEO of the hospital, Lori Weston. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Leslie.
So is the new clinic, is it within the hospital or what, did you have another addition?
It's across the street from the hospital. It's in our Round Valley clinic. We renovated the space on the second floor.
Okay. And what does that clinic include?
So right now we've got a clinic that we can have up to 9 providers in there. We currently have a psychiatrist, an APRN nurse that can also do adolescent and pediatric therapy, and we've got a psychologist as well.
Okay. So we had heard from a survey that was done a few years ago, what is really missing in our area are beds for people with psychiatric issues to be admitted. So this sounds like it's just really another clinic space.
So this is actually, it is an outpatient clinic. We are trying to really get ahead of healthcare on prevention and wellness. We offer crisis appointments with this clinic, which means you can get in either same day or within 24 to 48 hours to be seen by a provider, which is something that we haven't had in this community.
Yeah, and we've heard about this as well. I mean, you know, the problem that we've got is that when somebody comes to the ER with a broken leg, they are seen in a matter of hours. Somebody who is coming in with a psychiatric episode are told they need to wait 3 weeks because we don't have anywhere to put them. So, I mean, is that something that the hospital's looking ahead at?
Yes, definitely. So if someone presents into our ER with a mental health need, they are immediately seen by our telecrisis, which is a provider over our TV, and evaluated. And then they are triaged to either, if they need to have acute therapy and need a bed, they'll be transferred down to Salt Lake to either one of our facilities or go down to Uni. And if they can be seen within 24 hours, we'll get them into the provider at the clinic.
Okay. And then this clinic, is it basically office hours?
Yes. Yeah. Right now it's office hours, but that we do have extended office hours and hoping to go into the weekend at some point.
Okay. So that there would be at least 7 days a week, 6 days a week?
Yes, yes. Probably 6 days is what we would hope to go towards. But we do have early morning and evening appointments available as well.
Okay. So what was on this in this clinic before you renovated it?
So in the clinic, we did have a psychiatry space in there before, but there was also the Applegate Clinic, the Applegate Pharmacy that was in there prior to that.
Okay. And the funding then, I mean, it was, so the building was built, it was just a renovation?
Yes, yes, that's correct. So in order for us to bring this service to the community, we actually had some generous donors that came forward to help us get the funding available to accelerate getting this project started here in the community. And that was with the Marriott Foundation, the Strasser Family Foundation, and Rachel Macri. So we're deeply grateful for their generosity.
Yeah. And I read that you're still looking for another $3 million to what? Just operate the clinic? Is that what?
Yes, really to bring the needed resources into the community. Currently, we've got provider that they will treat from pediatric adolescents to adults. But there is a huge mental health need for our geriatric population and an even greater need for pediatrics. There's just not a lot of pediatric access up here.
Okay. So in terms of the future expansion of the hospital, what are you guys still looking at? Are you complete?
We're never complete, as you know, since we opened the hospital, we've expanded 3 times. So we will be looking into, as I mentioned before, getting ahead and upstream of healthcare, our health and wellness initiatives, sports performance. We'll be starting construction on that this year. Bringing on concierge medicine, our navigation services. We're also going to be expanding our Intermountain Heart Institute at Park City Hospital, consolidating our cardiology services. A lot of our services we have for cardiology, you really can do right here in town and not have to travel.
Ah, okay. So what's the sports performance?
Sports performance is really about human performance and meeting people where they are in their health journey. So whatever goals they have to either increase endurance or get fit. If they're an elite athlete and they're trying to compete and get to that next level, we'll do testing and we'll offer those services. We focus on exercise, nutrition, sports psychology, movement, recovery.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you're talking about adding square footage, though, to make that happen?
So we have shelled space in the north building that we just built out a couple years ago, and so we'll just be renovating some of that shelled space there on campus.
Okay. And then the concierge that you talk about, is this where people pay a couple $1,000?
Yes, it'll be a subscription service that we are starting this year where, yes, you'll pay a membership and you'll have 24/7 access to a physician who will help you navigate. Those will include your primary care appointments and any of your health needs that you have.
Okay. Was there a request for that? I mean, was this something that you saw there was a need for?
Yes, there's been, we've had a lot of requests here. We've got a lot of people that come in and out of town, either on vacation or second homeowners, that have a really hard time accessing health care. And so this will be a service that would be available not only to them, but also our local community as well.
Yeah. And then where are you on registering your doctors? Of course, we've got March 1 with medical cannabis happening where doctors would actually require to write some recommendation for a patient. Where does IHC stand on that?
I think you would just need to check in with your primary care provider right now. I don't know the specifics on where we're at with that, but checking in with your primary care and then getting their direction from there.
Okay. But I mean, is there any message then to the IHC doctors that sure you can do this or we would ask that you don't? I mean, I think there's some concern whether or not doctors should do it or not.
I'll actually check into what's coming from corporate office on that.
Okay.
That's not a discussion I've been involved in, but right. I know that I can get some information to you about that and what the process is.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
It is, actually.
Okay, Lori, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's it. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Again, Lori Weston, CEO of the Park City Hospital. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time now, 850.